an interview with Harold Mintz on August the, what is it, the 8th, Harold? Today is the 7th of 2002 in Marietta by Hugh Gordon. Harold, I have most of your background, your personal background, from a previous interview with Kennesaw State. Let me start, if I may, with your your application to come to work at Lockheed and the jobs that you held in the early years. I believe you said you came to work in April of 51, one month before me.
Yes, that's right. April 16th, 1951. And before that, I was in Rock Hill, at, where I was raised, and in the construction business with heavy equipment and the Pure Oil Distributor. And prior to that, I was with Bell Aircraft. And then prior to Bell Aircraft, I was with Volte Aircraft. Nashville, Tennessee. I left Nashville, Tennessee and came down here because it was closer home. The plant, the roof wasn't even finished on the plant. They were building it then.
That was talking about Bell.
Talking about Bell.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so then I went on, they asked me if I'd go down and help get the training department started,
yeah,
which I did.
Just a minute. Okay, Harold, let's just pick this up now with how you got from coming into production and up to be a manager of the all-black department.
Well, to start on the B-47, I built the structure on the nose section and I had it on schedule. And the primary wasn't going good and holding up airplanes, so Lee Poole moved me down and I got it going. But the aft section was not coming along. The aft section had 900 colored and two white. The two white was to work the shortages out of the department when the section moved to another department. You couldn't send them out of that department to work in another department.
The blacks, that is.
The blacks, that is. Mm-hmm.
They had two white guys to run out.
And catch the shortages.
Catch the shortages.
After the section moved out of 2113.
See, it got fixed.
That's right.
Okay.
So, Lee Poore told me he wanted me to go down and work on it. It was holding up the whole airplane. And we didn't have the aft sections to mate onto it to move them out to get them ready to go to the flight line.
All right, this is the B-47.
The B-47.
We were building B-47s from scratch.
B-47s.
Right.
And so they
And they were much needed for the Korean War.
Yes.
That's
they
why we
need
opened
them
bad. Opened this plant up.
That's right. And so it was holding up the whole airplane. In the meantime, they said if we didn't get it going, they were thinking seriously of buying this section from Chance Vault in Texas, who was already building them for Boeing in Wichita. They were geared up for it, had the know-how, and was doing it. So he said he wanted me to go down and see if I could.
Now, let me see if I understand that. You mean like we might have lost this section?
Oh, yes.
They take it. You said buy it. You mean
they were going to buy the section?
They were going to buy it from Lockheed.
From Chance Vault.
From Chance Vault.
We at Lockheed was going to buy it from Chance Vault and not build it there. Just shut down that operation.
Build it somewhere else, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So he wanted me to go down and do it. And he said he'd give me whatever I needed, and when he moved me from department to department, I'd always say, well, now, there'd be a few things I'll have, and that got to be quite a joke with us. But I got down there, and I found out first that the attendance was real, real bad. A lot of them wasn't coming to work on a regular basis. And I also found out that the housekeeping was deplorable, and it wasn't going so good there, and there wasn't much interest in building it, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, first thing I did was...
Well, let me interrupt you if I may.
Mm-hmm.
You had managed, supervised other production workers, so there was a certain work standard that you immediately recognized was not there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you had statistics on attendance and all that kind of stuff. So it was really, it was not a matter of opinion. It was a serious, well-known problem.
Yes. For each cost center was running way over budget on each ship serial. And the schedule was way behind the planned schedule. And so that wasn't too good. Well, I had big charts made up of each cost center of what they were supposed to be doing, and then the big line under what they really were doing. In other words, scheduled on the schedule there, and then the actual there. And then on the budget, we were budgeted so much in each cost center for each ship serial.
Right, the cost center for every, you had many cost centers,
yes,
in the one department.
Okay. Yes.
Depending on what job they were on.
That's right. And so I got all those made up, and I took all of these people in groups down to the theater in the basement and put my charts up and went through these with each affected group, telling them what we should be doing, what we had to do, and then what we were actually doing,
mm-hmm,
to show them what their performance was. Because I'm sure some of them didn't know what it was and really what was expected.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and like I say, the housekeeping was deplorable. So then I set up a housekeeping committee, and I put one of the colored supervisors in charge of it, named Smitty.
Okay.
And by the way, I made several black supervisors.
Mm-hmm. You started off with white supervisors.
Yes. And I put him in charge of it, and then I we picked lead men out of the different cost centers, and once a week we drew us up a system to go by, how many points you'd count off for each condition you'd see in a call center when you'd go to inspect it, and set them up, and they made an inspection once a week, and each call center under the supervisor got a grading. And the one with the lowest grading, well, he was the low man for a week, and somewhere I got, someone gave me a dirty duckling. It was the dirtiest, ugliest looking thing you ever seen.
Was this a dead duck?
No.
It was just a
replica.
Replica, okay.
Yeah. And the supervisor that made the lowest score on housekeeping had to keep that dirty duck sitting on his high boy till the next inspection. You didn't have too much trouble with him getting it the next time either.
Let me ask you, I think you told me before that you were, what, the third manager of this department?
I was the third manager in that
department.
The other
two had not done the job.
It hadn't come along like it should.
I can see you were giving him visual evidence of what they were doing and what they were not doing, and incentive to do it. Right.
Well, that's right. And I'm in a sort of put a game into it on the housekeeping too,
mm-hmm,
where they would I got extra attention on it this way.
Okay. All right.
And then also, the supervisor that made the best on his budget performance and everything, each week in my staff meetings, he got recognition.
Okay.
And so that part worked real good. Another thing that I did one time, shortly after I'd been there, on a Sunday we wasn't working. The people wasn't working. I had all the supervisors come in. I had the methods man come in, who was Mark Chamberlain, by the way. He was my methods man then.
Oh, I can't believe that.
Methods engineer.
He became president, vice president of finance. Yeah, but go ahead.
Well, it was his daddy.
Oh, okay.
His daddy, see.
Oh, his daddy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I got my inspection supervisor and my planning man and my engineer. And we all went in on a Sunday, and we worked about three-fourths of that day. I made the supervisors get in on the jobs that had been holding up their area,
mm-hmm.
and had them get in on it, and maybe another supervisor help him, and I had them doing physical work.
Did you have black supervisors at that time?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So that meeting was blacks and whites?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
How many black supervisors would you, that's a long time ago, but what do you recall about
Well,
that?
Let and me
what,
see now.
Tell me about what period of time this was.
This would have been, I'd say, the early part of 54.
Okay.
Now, I'm not real certain on my times.
Okay.
I moved so many times, and it has been quite a while ago.
Right.
But, let's see. I had, Harry Hudson was one, and I had one by the name of Patterson. And Smitty, and then I made Kelly. And I had another one, I can't remember his name, but he went on to work in personnel and was sort of our representative on the, what is it, the EEOC or something.
Yeah. Not right. He might have been, you're talking about, it might have been Pat Patterson who worked for me.
Well, maybe
he later went to inspection.
Well, this one stayed working there.
Yeah, must have been another person there.
On that thing for quite a long time.
Yeah, right.
So I had, after I'd been there for not too long a period, I remember I had either four or five then.
Okay. Black supervisors.
Yes.
Yes, this would have been in the early or mid-50s.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get a turnaround here, get the results you were looking for?
Well, another thing I did, and they gave me the authority to call the shots, when and how much overtime we'd work. And when I went down there, they were working 7 days a week.
My word.
And wasn't getting much done. Well, the first thing I did was cut out Sunday work. And then I worked Saturdays for a while on some of them till I got them moving. And then I would work where I needed when something came up. But I cut it out and I got more work.
Really?
Yes. Everybody was tired of coming in. I'd say I was there about, I got it started moving like in the first month, showing gain.
Okay.
And within a period of about 4 months, I had it on schedule.
That's good.
And within a period of about 5 or 6 months, I was making budget.
Okay.
And shortly after that, They were starting the 130 right across from where I was in the High Bay area. And they were going to build and had set it up, get ready to start building all the sub-assemblies for the C-130 there, so they could fit them right to the airplane. There'd been no major section, anything completed at that time. And Dan Horton had them move me over there to 2320 was the department.
Okay.
And he told me, and Dan came by and talked to me. He said he wanted me to get all the engineering problems fixed, planning problems, tooling problems, planning, and all of those problems fixed on those parts. And then a lot of them would be moved back over to fabrication, like they're always made, see. But we were going to build them for the first 7 airplanes. Well, we got over there, and it was laid out, and they said that as time went on, the 2113, the aft section of the B-47, was about to start taping off. And there was a bunch of people there. So we were going to need them all.
Now, the people that you had there, were they all white, or did you have any blacks in there?
They were all white when I went over there.
Okay.
So we had to do something with some of those people because they were fixing to taper off on the B-47.
The workload was reduced.
The first things to be built was getting built. See,
okay.
As went on. And over in that department, in the High Bay area, they had the big racks, and you know, they're 6 or 8 feet tall. They kept the parts in.
Right.
And so then they had one area just completely closed in, just enough room to walk in. And that's where I was supposed to bring the blacks over and work them in that area, separate from the whites, on the other side of them big racks, not together.
It was fenced in by racks.
Yes, it was.
Racks, yeah.
Well, I started off with that, and then I started, I'd move like a rack a night. I'd have my night man move that rack and put it over on the edge. And as time went on, I had all of them moved.
Where did the instructions come to put those racks up there? Do you know anything about that?
It was already set up that way to work that way when I went over there.
Did they explain that to you?
No.
Nobody explained it. But understood exactly what they were doing.
Oh, yeah. It was done for that purpose.
There must have been some concern. What was the concern? Do you ever hear anybody talk about what would happen if it didn't have that separation?
They were fearful of it. They felt that you couldn't let them be together.
Well, the two different groups would be resentful.
Yes, very resentful.
Intolerant.
And the whites would resent it the most.
Yeah.
Well.
Did you ever have any whites come to you and say, I've been not moving any blacks in here?
No. So what I did was move those racks out of the middle and opened it up.
Okay.
And then as the work progressed, and I worked with my supervisors, I had some that you could really work with. And it wasn't long till you'd see a black and a white working together on the same jig. It was small jigs, see. And nobody told anybody they had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They were not forced to do it. There was no mandate. And I didn't get a complaint. And Dan Horton came down one day. He used to keep up with me pretty good. And he looked and he says, "What have you done?" He saw them and they were even working together and all them racks was gone. And I said, "Well, Dan, it's just a matter of time till somebody would probably make us do that. So why don't we do it ourselves and not make the people do it?" I said, "I haven't told anybody they have to do it. I haven't had one complaint, not one."
Mm-hmm.
Did that surprise you?
Oh, yeah. It surprised him, too. He stood there, and his eyes got big.
Now, Dan Horton's the president of the company.
Yeah.
At that time. Okay.
Yeah. And he just said it. And so he took off.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say yay, nay, or not. And then next day, he called me, and we got together, and he said, what do you figure you do? I said, real simple. I haven't told any of those people that they have to work together. I haven't received the first complaint. And that's the way you need to do it in all of the departments. And he said, well, you've done it. And there was nothing about no changing, and I left it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept it that way. And it was running good, and running good. And Vic Alexander was the superintendent at that time of Peach State Mod, right over on the other side of me. And they were having some problems over there. And Dan went by and said, Vic, is there anything I can do? And Vic says, yeah. Give me Harold Mintz over here as my assistant. I need him. He said, all right, you'll have him Monday. Well, Lee Poole was on vacation. So Monday, they moved me over there. And about a week later, Lee come back, and I was over there. I had my section. Lee said, what are you doing over here?
And did Lee report to Vic?
No. Vic reported to Lee.
Okay. I'm going to get that straight. Okay.
Yeah. See, Lee was over all of it.
Okay.
And Vic said, well, I just needed some help. And said, Dan asked me what he could do to help, and I told him that I sure needed you. Well, that just tore Lee up. Oh, he didn't like it a little bit. He resented it like everything. And about that time, I got elected president of the management club. And he come up to see me.
Must be about 54 then, wasn't it?
It had been the end of 54 when that happened,
right.
when I was over there, because I was president in 55.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got elected. It had been at the end of 54, for 55. And Lee said, and you got in the management club here? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I'm going to take care of that. Oh, he really got upset with me. And he said, I'll get you out of here. And I said, well, Lee, I didn't move me over there. But anyway, I stayed there a while. And
did you have bring black employees in there?
Not while I was there. I wasn't there long till they moved me over in fabrication to 1807.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's big. Nothing had been split off of it then. Drop hammers.
It's fabrication.
Everything was there. Stretch presses.
Mm-hmm.
And
Were any blacks there?
No.
Uh-huh. Huh. Most of the blacks are right there in that one big department.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They were all in that big department.
Well, what happened after you left? Who became the manager of that after you left? What did you say that department? Black department was 21?
2113.
Okay.
They brought the night, my night man, his name was Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought him today. See, it was on the
decline
then.
Okay.
And it was going down. And so as it went down, they had all them people. And that's when we started after that. Then they started putting them in.
Well, seniority would be a factor in there too.
Well,
when you start surplusing and the more senior blacks would bump out less senior whites, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a surplus in because the the mod was still going pretty good then, and the C-130 was just building up.
Management at that point was still in control of where they put the blacks.
Yeah, but after that, they got to putting them in the different departments for the 130.
Mm-hmm. That was the real integration process, which was right in the mid-50s then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mid to the late 50s. But you had black supervisors before that. What is your recollection of the first time you had a black supervisor over white people in a crew? May not necessarily be the first time. What's the earliest time that you can remember?
I'd have to think about that. Well, we had those supervisors I made there, and they were not downgraded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Big Kelly went on, he went to fabrication in one of the buildings on our pass two, the B2 building.
Okay.
And he was out there. Harry Hudson worked a while there, but then he went in material.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so then the others, it took a little while there, but those black people, most of them went right on into the 130.
Mm-hmm. Where they would be in integrated crews.
Yes, and it would be doing what they'd been doing.
Yeah.
See, structures were.
Well, they were, what classification were done? Structures?
Structure assemblers.
And generals? Did any of them get to be generals?
Structures,
assembly generals?
I'm sure that some of them did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And those, you started them as helpers and instructors, assemblers, and instructor generals.
Yeah, they wouldn't be helpers very much.
Yeah, well, that's a very temporary classification.
Right? Yeah.
But I mean, people generally were hired as helpers.
Yeah, but they'd get on up to a structures assembly and work there.
Like 90 days or so.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
probationary period. They didn't make it structures assembly, they were probably ready to go out the door.
Yeah.
Because couldn't do the work or something.
But I didn't have a problem with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, give me your observation about, you know, the difference between supervising blacks and whites. You'd have experience doing both. When you were brought over there to 21, tell me that number again, Department 21?
2113 was
13.
The aft section of
the aft section,
B-47. Yeah. 2320 was
that's the C-130.
The C-130.
Yeah, 23 is Burks.
All the small parts and stuff.
Well, I mean, you had, in the first few years of Lockheed, you had supervised only white people. And now you get this new experience of supervising, managing black people.
Yeah, and of course I had, I'd already been out to the wash rack paint shop in the pretty early 50s. Because they had the flight line shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And out there, we had black wash crews.
Okay.
And we had them there, but they were all black.
Uh-huh.
And they did the washing and stripping of airplanes.
Yeah. You remember what their classifications?
It's a classification of a wash rack.
Wash rack attendant or
mm-hmm.
something like that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's another place where Lockheed brought in blacks to people and to jobs. Now, that was not a skilled job, though, as a structures assembler, though.
No, washing airplane is not.
Structures assembler, would you call that a skilled or semi-skilled job?
I would say it was a skilled job.
Okay.
Because
you had to tell you had to read blueprints, and they had
blueprint
training.
You had to do some fitting.
You had to use hand tools, machine tools.
Yeah.
You had
measurements, micrometers, and tolerance, close tolerance.
Well, you had your tolerances. You didn't get into much reading micrometers or anything, but it had to be fit. You had a lot, some places you had to file to fit.
Right.
Your drilling had to be good. It couldn't be oversized or elongated. You had to know what kind of rivets to put in that place to have a formed head that met the specifications.
Right.
In there. So you had to know that.
Okay, when you just go back to staffing the plant first, your first assembly management job, you had some old Bell workers, didn't you?
Yes.
Like you probably recruited as many of those as you could.
I got just as many of them as I could that I'd had supervision that worked for me during Bell.
Right.
That I got with Lockheed,
mm-hmm.
And I got some good ones.
Okay. Now, that's where the different experience was. The plant was staffed initially with as many skilled people, the assembly people, as could be recruited. And then the hiring of blacks was people who represented people who had no aircraft or assembly or industrial experience.
Yeah, you can say that would generally cover the whole thing, because overall you could just say they hadn't had experience working on an airplane before. Mm-hmm. Lockheed.
Yeah. When you integrated this F section in the C-130 section, what about that? Did you get comments from other managers, white managers? Did they?
None of them had caught it. None of them
had. They didn't know about it, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I laughed about it. I just kept going in. To me, it was just a funny thing. How could it be talked about so much and so many people so concerned about it, and people going about their everyday business didn't even notice it happening right there?
Did you have any problems with
Not a problem. I didn't have a single problem. There wasn't a white person in that department that complained about it.
Well, considering the precautions that had been taken to put these parts racks up there and in effect fence off the area, it is sort of amazing that there wasn't a problem.
No, I did it gradual,
mm-hmm.
and so slow, it wasn't something you'd notice from one day to next.
Yeah. Right. Let me just stop for a minute.